court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 10-0886, N. Ray Billy Frederick Allen, an original proceeding. 110519, Evanston Insurance Company versus Legacy of Life Incorporated, which is here on a certified question. And 110855, Nestle USA Inc., Switch Place and NSBMA versus Susan Combs, Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts, and Greg Abbott, the Attorney General of Texas. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these matters, and the court will take a brief recess between the arguments. These proceedings are being recorded, and there will be a link to the arguments posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is ready to hear argument in the first matter, 10-0886, N. Ray Billy Frederick Allen.
May it please the court, Mr. Moore will present argument for the relator. The relator has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. The issue before the court this morning is whether my client, Billy Frederick Allen, has been granted relief on the basis of actual innocence when his writ was granted for habeas corpus by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. This is a simple question with a simple answer. And the answer I submit to the court is in my hands. The opinion in Ex Parte Allen, the one in which the Court of Criminal Appeals granted Mr. Allen's writ. In the first words written by Justice Holcomb in the opinion, he states, and I will read it for the benefit of the court, this is a post-conviction habeas corpus proceeding brought under Article 1107 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure in which applicant Billy Frederick Allen presents a Schlupp-type claim of actual innocence as a procedural gateway through which to raise his otherwise barred constitutional claim of ineffective assistance of trial counsel.
But Judge Price writes that the plurality never does find actual innocence. And he would, makes a point of it.
Your Honor, Judge Price states that he himself agrees that Billy Allen met the standard required for him to establish his actual innocence and therefore go on and have the ineffective assistance of counsel question addressed as well.
But he says he can't join the plurality because they won't go that far.
Judge Price had a concern with what the plurality was doing as far as relying upon Schlupp or relying upon the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure. Texas Code of Criminal Procedure, Article 1107, Section 4A2, is a codification of the Supreme Court's decision in Schlupp that states if you've had one writ on a constitutional claim, then you are subsequently barred from re-raising that claim. You must first show actual innocence. In fact, the language in Schlupp used by the United States Supreme Court is, in order to meet the Schlupp standard, you must show it is more likely than not that a constitutional claim led to the conviction of an innocent man.
So tell us, where are you getting the determination of actual innocence? Read that language to us, please.
First, the court states, Billy Allen presents a Schlupp-type claim of actual innocence and then goes on to hold in the next sentence, we hold that applicant is entitled to relief. Elsewhere, the court goes on to state, in the plurality opinion, the lead opinion, in light of the state of this evidence, it is not surprising that the habeas corpus found that the newly discovered evidence of innocence was so strong that it could not have confidence in the outcome of the trial. We agree. The court very clearly.
Is it true that if the case had been retried, he could have been convicted again?
Yes, Your Honor. That is true.
So how's that actual innocence?
Your Honor, the state has argued that the Herrera-type actual innocence claim is the only one that is compensable. However, A habeas writ is a procedural matter. It does not dismiss somebody from the system. In a Herrera-type writ, that person is returned to the trial court to answer the charges against them.
That person be retried under a Herrera-type claim?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, this court heard the case of N. Ray Billy James Smith last year, heard the oral argument in 2010 and made a determination in that case in 2011. The comptroller did not contest Billy Smith's innocence. However, in the writ granted by the Court of Criminal Appeals in Billy Smith's case, the last line states, the judgment in cause number F86-90792-UL in Criminal District Court Number 5 of Dallas County is set aside, and applicant is remanded to the custody of the Sheriff of Dallas County to answer the charges against him.
And so he answers, and then what? But the question is, Judge Medina's question was, can he be retried?
He can be retried. He can be retried.
Are there any examples of that?
None that I'm unaware of any instances.
So it would be possible then, under your theory, for there to be a declaration of actual innocence and compensation by the comptroller, and then conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. So somebody who is declared actually innocent, in fact, later becomes convicted, finally convicted, and yet receives compensation from the state. That seems a little anomalous.
Your Honor, that is a potential outcome. However, the legislature has already written into the statute that if you receive a subsequent conviction, you lose your compensation. So therefore, there is some coverage for a situation like this occurring. However, if we go back to the practical side, instead of looking at what the potential theoretical outcome is here, the practical side is if the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has looked at a case and they've weighed the facts and the record and they've determined that because newly discovered evidence that was unavailable at trial, this person's evidence of innocence is so strong, they're going to overturn and set aside that conviction.
Is the standard preponderance of the evidence for actual innocence?
For actual innocence on a Schlupp-type claim. And, Your Honor, the reason why there is a preponderance of the evidence standard is because of the extenuating circumstances in a Schlupp-type claim.
And Counsel, before you go down that road too far, can Billy Frederick Allen be retried in this case? Understand that DA in Dallas County dismissed the indictments. Was there a case pending in the district court there? And if so, what did the district court do?
The district court,
given the remand order from the CCA.
The district court, upon remand, released him on bond, and the matter was remained pending from March of 2009 until May of 2011, when the district attorney finally decided to dismiss it, stating that they didn't have the evidence to go forward with a trial.
And what did the court do upon the dismissal of the indictments? The DA cannot dismiss the proceeding. What did the court do?
Yes, Your Honor. The court dismissed the charges.
Is there an order?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's not in our record, though, is it?
No, Your Honor. And I will make sure that this week I do a post-argument submission to get that order into the record.
What is the difference between actual innocence and innocence? I assume you're proceeding, or it looks like you're proceeding, under Civil Practice and Remedies Code 103-001-A to B only, not A and not C, but only B.
Correct? Yes, Your Honor.
And it uses the term actual innocence. What's the difference between actual innocence and innocence in this type of a Schlupp case?
Your Honor, actual innocence is a term of art that has been used by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, as well as the United States Supreme Court and United States federal courts, to define a claim under a writ of habeas corpus. Now, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, every time they've dealt with the idea of actual innocence, has stated, it's standard language in their opinions, ex parte Tooley, ex parte Brown, ex parte Brooks, Schlupp v. Dillo. There are two types of actual innocence claims, a Herrera-type claim and a Schlupp-type claim. That is the standard language every time the Court of Criminal Appeals meets and issues an opinion on the issue of actual innocence.
But does the modifier actual add anything to the word innocence at all? Does it make it distinct from ordinary innocence as opposed to actual innocence? What does actual actually mean?
Your Honor, I believe that the term actual innocence is more theoretical in the concept of the overall judicial concept of once you've had a finalized conviction, at that point, it's not a merely insufficiency of the evidence standard. You must show that you were actually, factually innocent.
Do you believe that if somebody says, I have a reasonable doubt as to this person's guilt, does that mean the same thing as saying, I find this person actually innocent?
And so far as you're talking about an insufficiency of the evidence standard, I have a reasonable doubt that there's enough evidence to show this person is guilty. No, they are not the same. In United States versus Radican, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, in discussing the federal standard, said that in a Schlupp type claim, in order to meet the Schlupp standard, you must show actual, factual innocence and not merely insufficiency of the evidence. That is what Billy Allen was able to do in Ex Parte Allen, or else he never would have had the writ granted.
And I want to be sure that to the answer to my earlier question, you don't know of a Herrera case that was retried?
No, Your Honor. Because, Your Honor, the only Herrera cases are DNA cases. In effect, what the comptroller's position is here is that if you were exonerated on any other basis but DNA, then you don't get compensation. There has never been a case, never been a non-DNA case that received Herrera relief. In fact, the United States...
a DNA case.
You could retry a DNA case, but again, the practical aspect of this is if you're facing a jury and you're the prosecutor and you have DNA exculpating the person you want to retry, are you going to spend the state's resources and your time to try to say, forget the scientist. I know, don't believe what your lying eyes are telling you. And go ahead and retry this person. Only DNA cases. In the statute...
So your argument is that retrial in a Herrera case is legally possible. It's just not going to happen because the standard is so high to get the relief in the first place, it won't do any good to retry the case.
Your Honor, my position is the fact that in any actual innocence case where you've shown that there is, that the newly discovered evidence proves somebody innocent enough to have the Court of Criminal Appeals overturn that conviction, there is a possibility of retrial. But it is likely not going to happen because you have that newly discovered evidence that stands in the way of the state making a case and convincing a jury to put that person back behind bars. And that's whether it's a Schlupp type claim, whether it's a Herrera claim with DNA evidence.
And it seems like in this case, if the jury heard the newly discovered evidence, they still might convict.
It's possible, Your Honor. Now, I've heard speculation, media reports, talking to attorneys that were former district attorneys in the Dallas County District Attorney's Office that said there is no evidence. At that point in time, the state's only evidence was the fact that you had a fingerprint on the car, which was explained by witnesses.
A palm print.
A palm print on the victim's car, which was explained by witnesses as being an innocent occurrence. And the testimony of the police officer who said he identified a Billy Allen. That testimony was directly challenged by the testimony of two witnesses who were found to be believable and were separate and apart from the case, these two paramedics. Now, in this case...
Although the DA, in its motion to dismiss in Dallas, did indicate that there was a witness that was found that had decided to be uncooperative. If that witness were cooperative, the retrial might not be as black and white as you said. Depends on what the witness would have said.
Yes, Your Honor. There was supposedly, and I say supposedly because this witness was supposed to have undergone an lie detector test, but decided that they didn't want to show up for this lie detector test. So this uncooperative was they were never willing to submit themselves to the determination of whether they were telling the truth. This witness that supposedly came forward 26 years after the crime occurred, you stack this witness with the several witnesses that said that this other Billy Wayne Allen was seen with in possession of the goods, was claimed to have committed the murder. But the issue here, Your Honor, in a Chapter 103 claim in Abbott v. Young, the Third Court of Appeals has stated in a Chapter 103 claim, we're not here to determine guilt or innocence. Justice Cochran, in her concurring opinion in Ex parte Allen, says, look, the record's out there. It's irrelevant that a different fact finder could come to a different conclusion. We have weighed the record. The habeas corpus court looked at the record and they determined that he was innocent. We agree.
Let me just ask you, yes, about the effect of the higher burden in a Herrera claim. Can you comment on that?
The higher burden in a Herrera claim is based upon the fact that in a Herrera claim and a DNA claim, there is absolutely no showing of any problem with the procedure. You assume someone got a fair trial at the trial court level. They had a good attorney, a good prosecutor, good police, a good investigation, and a good jury. But still, they're innocent. In a Schlupp type claim, the procedure was flawed. That person didn't get fair due process. They did not get the opportunity to put on their case for whatever reason that be, whether the evidence was hidden by the prosecutor, the police, or defendant's attorney failed to find it. And so the Supreme Court says we give less deference to that conviction, so therefore that's why we maintain a lower standard of proof. I see my time is about up. If there's no further questions, I'm reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. The court then is ready to hear argument from the respondent and real party in interest.
May it please the court, Mr. Leyenberger will present argument for the respondent.
Good morning, and may it please the court. The Texas legislature intended the phrase, quote, has been granted relief on the basis of actual innocence, unquote, to incorporate case law describing a person who has affirmatively proven his actual innocence based on a Herrera-type claim.
If it's DNA, though, and theoretically you can go back and retry the case, what is the real difference, other than it would be a much tougher burden, I'm assuming, if DNA conclusively proves otherwise?
I'm very glad Your Honor asked that question, and I need to clarify the premise here. Premise is false. Opposing counsel says that Herrera-type habeas claim is only a claim based on DNA evidence. That's just not true. It's just simply not true. If you look at the Court of Criminal Appeals' adoption of the Herrera-type habeas standard in Texas as a matter of Texas state habeas jurisprudence, that was a witness recantation case. Elizondo. As well as the Ex parte Franklin is another example of where Herrera type was relief was granted. It wasn't a DNA case.
And so how does actual innocence fit into this witness recantation?
It works this way, Your Honor. When you have a person asserting a bare claim, a freestanding claim of actual innocence, that means that there's no allegation of constitutional trial error. That they're saying, I have evidence that is clear and convincing and affirmatively proves that I'm actually innocent. And based on that claim and that claim alone, you may get habeas relief because the theory is that that would be a violation of due process to keep that person incarcerated or even worse, put that person to death.
Mm-hmm. Innocence.
One distinction for you to finish on that? Can you just finish that, how it works in the context?
Well, Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has set forth a very specific procedure and for establishing an actual innocence Herrera type claim. It's a two-prong test. The first prong is that the applicant must affirmatively prove they're actually innocent. And what that means is they must bring forth clear and convincing evidence, exculpatory evidence, that will void, rebut, and nullify the old inculpatory evidence of guilt. If they can meet that burden, clear that hurdle, then the court moves to a weighing. And what the court does is the court asks itself, is there clear and convincing evidence here that would convince us that a juror acting rationally, hearing and believing both sets of evidence, both the inculpatory and exculpatory evidence, would be compelled to acquit the applicant because the two sets of evidence cannot rationally be reconciled. That is what a Herrera-type actual innocence claim means in Texas.
Are you saying that Herrera-type claimants are the only ones that are entitled to compensation under the Act?
Absolutely.
Is that the bottom line of
that
your argument?
That is the bottom line. And the reason we're saying this is the legislature did not intend to grant compensation to a schlup-type habeas claimant like Mr. Allen, who has not affirmatively proven his innocence and who may be found guilty after retrial.
So what's the effect of the amendment 103-001-A2B?
On this case or just in general?
Okay.
There's no effect. It doesn't apply to this case. This case was filed in 2010. The amendment went into effect in 2011.
And what effect generally?
Generally, the amendment added more verbiage. And the one thing it did clarify is prior to 2011, it just said that you had to have been granted relief on the basis of actual innocence. It didn't make it clear that we were talking about habeas. And so what the legislature did was they put in, you know, the words, you know, you've been granted relief in a writ of habeas corpus. And so that clarified that. And because of some things that were going on in the background with the Anthony Graves case, that was all clarified. It's more verbiage, but it really means the same thing. And if anything, it only proves what I'm saying here today, that the legislature intends a Herrera-type claimant to get compensation, but not a schlup-type claimant.
In a schlup-type claim, if we move the compensation determination back to after the retrial, would that cause you a problem? Because then we'd know if the person is going to be found guilty or innocent.
Yes, it would be a problem for this reason. Because if you have a retrial, a person is not found innocent. They are found to be not guilty. In other words, the state just hasn't met their constitutional burden to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. So a schlup-type claimant is never going to be entitled to compensation.
Here's a bit of tension with your position. Maybe you can answer it for me. In Schlupp, the U.S. Supreme Court said, and we've kind of hit on this, meaning of actual innocence does not merely require showing a reasonable doubt, but rather that no reasonable juror could have found the defendant guilty. Okay, so the claimant doesn't have to prove his or her innocence, just that no reasonable jury would have found him guilty. As was pointed out earlier, Justice Price in his concurrence says, by preponderance of the evidence, no rational juror could have found this claimant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Okay, so Price cites the standard. He says the majority doesn't expressly cite it.
Mm-hmm.
Cochran says they do make that determination. But Womack, as I understand it, Judge Womack didn't write. He concurred in the judgment, so it seems that there's only four.
It's a 4-4.
At most, that join the plurality opinion. Is that enough?
No. May I correct Your Honor on one thing? Only two judges join the plurality opinion. Judge Price.
Four total on the plurality opinion.
For granting
right.
habeas
Three
relief.
Three joined it, four total.
And
right.
This is an important point. Granting her habeas relief based on the ineffective assistance of counsel claim. He's not getting habeas relief because he proved he was innocent. And this is important because I invite the court to go look at the ex parte Brooks decision of the Court of Criminal Appeals. It's cited in my supplemental brief. It'll lay out the Schlupp procedure very clearly for you. And what the court says is going on in Schlupp is you only have to make a prima facie showing. You just need credible evidence that will cast sufficient doubt on the outcome of the trial without additional assurances that there was no harmful constitutional error. You do not actually prove you're innocent. You just cast some doubt on
it. So we won't find in any Schlupp-type case a declaration that the defendant is actually innocent.
What you'll find is the court will say, you've satisfied the Schlupp gateway, and we're going to go ahead and determine your constitutional claims on their merits. In other words, you've made a prima facie showing. You've convinced us that there's enough evidence there that possibly not giving this person a new trial in light of the constitutional error might be a miscarriage of justice.
But the court never says, the courts never say in a Schlupp-type case that this defendant is actually innocent.
Never is a big word. What I can speak to in Texas habeas procedure is all they're showing is you've made a prima facie showing of it.
But it's more than that. You have to show probably the jury, a reasonable jury would not find it, would not convict.
Well, the standard is in Article 1107, Section 4A of the Code of Criminal Procedure, and it says, by preponderance of the evidence, but the constitutional error, a jury would have to find you not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
Preponderance of the evidence is probably.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's the same as the Schlupp standard.
Yes, Your Honor.
What if a Schlupp claim were found to have been established by the Court of Criminal Appeals, and for some reason a retrial was impossible? Say limitations was going to expire or something. Would your position still be that a Schlupp claim can never claim
yes, Your
never
Honor.
Be compensated?
That would be my position, because what I'm trying to convey to the court here, and hopefully I'm being successful, is a Schlupp claimant doesn't actually prove they're innocent, and they're not found to be innocent. And as far as, Justice Heck, the question about probabilities and preponderance of the evidence, yes, that language is there, but if you look at what the Court of Criminal Appeals says is going on, it's just a prima facie case.
Yeah, under your theory,
that's
though,
what they say.
Under your theory, no one is ever found to be innocent unless there's some type of DNA evidence that totally clears the person of the...
No, Your Honor, that's not my theory
at
all.
You just said a non-guilty verdict doesn't mean you're actually innocent. You said here a procedural mechanism for ineffective assistance of counsel to try to get this writ granted doesn't mean anything other than there's not enough evidence. So under your theory, only under Herrera-type claim can you actually have the actual innocence.
That is my theory. Under Schlupp, the legislature did not intend for Schlupp-type claimants to receive that compensation. They did intend for Herrera-type.
What other type of procedure or mechanism could this individual have pursued to get the relief that he apparently appears to be entitled to?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I disagree that it's apparent that he's entitled to this relief, because just look at the Court of Criminal Appeals fragmented 4-4 decision in this case. You read all those opinions and you'll see that there is no way you can look at all of the evidence that was put forward in this case and say, this guy has proven that he's innocent. There is a lot of conflicting and contradictory evidence here. And the reason why the legislature would want a Herrera-type claimant to get compensation and not a Schlupp-type, the policy behind that construction is that the legislature wants to be assured that before handing out money, a person is truly innocent, and not that they might possibly be innocent. And only a Herrera-type claimant can provide that assurance.
What's the linguistic basis for your distinction? Sounds like you're drawing a distinction between the U.S. Supreme Court's definition of actual innocence in Schlupp and what the Texas statute requires. Because Schlupp doesn't require proof of actual innocence in a layperson's understanding. Schlupp requires showing that no reasonable juror could have found guilt. That's not necessarily proving your innocence. Sounds like you're arguing the latter. As a state requirement. What's the language that you rely on to draw that distinction?
A state requirement is the requirement that's found in the Code of Criminal Procedure.
Right.
And what Brooks says is that that language incorporates the concept of Schlupp. And Schlupp is merely a gateway claim. What they're saying in Schlupp is not that you're proving that you're innocent. You're only proving...
I understand that. What's the language in the state statute that allows you to draw that distinction? Or are you relying on case law reading that from the statute?
I'm relying on the statute, Article 1107, Section 4A2, and the case law from the Court of Criminal Appeals that has interpreted
that language. And the statute just says actual innocence. The state statute, the one you just cited.
Are we talking about the wrongful imprisonment statute, or are we talking about the Code of Criminal Procedure?
The statute you just referred to in the Code of
Criminal
Procedure.
That's the Code of Criminal Procedure. It doesn't even use the words actual innocence.
So how do you draw a distinction from the statute between a Herrera-type claim and a Schlupp-type claim? If the U.S. Supreme Court has said that actual innocence doesn't mean proving your innocence, it means is what we've talked about several times.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm afraid I'm not following your question.
I'm trying to understand the statutory basis for your position that in a Herrera-type claim, you know, you show that you didn't do it. Okay, you're
right.
Actually innocent in a layperson's understanding of the term actual innocence. Okay, on a Schlupp-type claim, you don't have to prove or show you didn't do it. You just have to, because of a procedural hurdle, show that no rational juror could have found guilt. Okay, that's the difference between failing to meet a standard of proof and proving that you're innocent.
Okay.
Sounds like you're arguing that in a Herrera claim, you do more of the latter.
Yes, you have.
Don't do that in a Schlupp claim, therefore there's no compensation for it. What's the statutory basis for you drawing that distinction?
Statutory basis is the language of the Wrongful Imprisonment Act uses the words has been granted relief on the basis of actual innocence.
And you think innocence only means Herrera type claims?
Yes,
why?
Your Honor. Why? Because only a Herrera type claimant is granted relief on the basis, affirmatively proves that they're actually innocent and is granted relief on that basis. A Schlupp claimant does neither of those things.
But could a court find you actually innocent in a Schlupp-type claim, like just Judge Price advocated in his separate writing, as we stand here today with the present state of the law? Could they make that finding?
What Judge Price was doing is he wasn't saying, this guy's convinced me that he's actually innocent, he deserves habeas relief. He's just merely saying that he's shown me enough that when it's coupled with this allegation of constitutional trial error, which we find is meritorious, I can't have confidence in the outcome. Judge Price is not saying I'm finding this person innocent.
So if he had gotten more support for that writing and the court would have made a finding of actual innocence, would that be different under your position?
When you get a finding of a prima facie showing of innocence under Schlupp, that doesn't mean you're found innocent. It just means that the court is going to decide your constitutional claims on the merits. And if you prevail on that, then you get a new trial. And let me speak to this whole retrial and release thing. There were a lot of questions about this. When you are a Schlupp-type claimant, the most relief you're going to be able to get is a retrial. That is not true of a Herrera-type claimant for many reasons. And first of all, let me say that the Code of Criminal Procedure for non-death penalty cases, 1107 Section 5, specifically says that the Court of Criminal Appeals may either remand to custody or release. And in the habeas provision for death penalty cases, there's the same type language. You may remand to custody or there may be a release. We submit that a Herrera-type claimant would be entitled to a release.
Well, then why in the one case was it remanded?
When someone is remanded to custody, that doesn't mean that they're going to be retried. It could be remanded to custody, and then the state can file a motion to dismiss, and then the person is discharged.
Well, but the example is remand to answer the charges. So what's the purpose of answering the charges if they're not going to be a retrial?
Well, the answering the charge, I think that's just boilerplate that we're going to send you back, and if the state decides that they're going to proceed against it, they could.
Let me try a never question again.
All right.
So are you saying that there is never a case in a Herrera-type claim where there is a retrial?
I can say this much, Your Honor. I'm not aware of a single one, and opposing counsel hasn't shown
it. And is it prohibited by law, a retrial in a Herrera-type case?
I would say it this way, Your Honor, that you would have a mighty big constitutional problem if you attempted to retry that person. Because
it's unconstitutional to retry in a Herrera-type case.
I submit that it would be. And for this reason, because you have the highest criminal appellate court in this state saying, based on this evidence, no rational trier of fact could convict in light of this newly discovered exculpatory evidence. You'd have a due process problem.
Let me ask you another question about about Chapter 103.
Yes, Your Honor.
It uses actual innocence, and Schlupp's been out there a long time, and Schlupp uses actual innocence. And knowing that, how can we distinguish between the Herrera actual innocence and the Schlupp actual innocence when all of the jurisprudence uses the same phrase?
I think we can distinguish it this way. You have to look at what the two types of claims of innocence are doing, and then look at the specific language of the Wrongful Imprisonment Act when it's talking about eligibility. It says you must have been granted relief on the basis of actual innocence. A Schlupp claimant is not granted relief on the basis of actual innocence. They're granted the relief on the basis of constitutional trial error. Only a Herrera claimant can say that. And that is why I say that the legislature, when they adopted this actual innocence language, they had in mind Herrera-type claimants only. And again, the policy consideration makes that abundantly clear, that legislature wants to be absolutely sure that before we start handing out money, that they can feel assured that someone is truly innocent.
So the actual innocence phrase in 103.001A2B really is a little different from that phrase in subsection C.
In subsection C,
where it says actual innocence, that's been order entered by the court that says actual innocence, et cetera. But based on your answer to Justice Heck's question, the use of actual innocence in B actually is a little bit different from its use in C.
Let's talk about what's going on in C. What's going on in C is that is the Graves Amendment that was put in 2011. And what you had in Graves was you had an individual who did not show, could not show, he could not get a certificate of appealability based on Schlupp. He couldn't get it based on Herrera. But you had this hue and cry in the state that this guy should be compensated. And so what the legislature did, they took the specifics of Anthony Graves' case and they said, well, if you can get a prosecutor to swear out an affidavit and certify that there's no credible inculpatory evidence and the prosecutor believes that you're actually innocent, we'll grant, that's another way of becoming eligible.
And the state court has to grant it.
Yes.
The district court.
The state court would have to grant that. That is a third way, you know, now 211 and going forward, that you can become eligible.
But again, that is proof that this person didn't do it, as opposed to there's a procedural hurdle, which is what
it's,
B seems
to be. It's proof that the prosecutor thinks that the person is innocent.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you.
Counsel, state says that before the comptroller can hand out taxpayer money, the legislature wanted to be sure that the claimant is really innocent, and we're pretty sure they just didn't do it, not that there's some procedural hurdle to finding them guilty. Before we hand out the taxpayers' money, that's what the legislature wanted. What's
Absolutely,
your response?
Your Honor. My response is the state intended to compensate innocent people that spent time in prison. That's the intent. Remember, this court last year declared this is a remedial statute. It's not subject to the more stricter rules of interpretation. There is no waiver of sovereign immunity. And so this court is supposed to broadly construe the intent of the legislature. The legislature wanted to compensate those that are wrongly convicted. You only have to look at the Graves case and the comments that were made about Anthony Graves and the fact that he didn't fit into any other mold. And so the legislature actually went back, passed an additional law to make sure that even though he could not satisfy the Schlupp standard, but they still wanted to make sure he got compensated because he was innocent. The plain and common language of this statute says on the basis of actual innocence. The word solely isn't in there. The standard clear and convincing isn't in there. As the court has seen, the legislature could have put that in there back in 2011. They didn't. It's not there. They simply state, has been granted relief on the basis of actual innocence. In a Schlupp type claim in Ex parte Brooks, which was cited by opposing counsel, and the reference here is 219 Southwest 3rd. At page 399, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals cites to Schlupp and adopts this standard. In a Schlupp-type claim, you must show it is more likely than not that a constitutional violation led to the conviction of an innocent person. Now, it didn't say led a constitutional violation led to a conviction. That's the first writ. The second writ requires that it be of an innocent person. I don't see how you could get past Schlupp if you haven't shown that you're an innocent person. Not, well, you may be innocent. It says you've proven that constitutional violation led to the conviction of an innocent person. Billy Frederick Allen proved that. The Court of Criminal Appeals based the granting of relief in his case on the fact that he met the Schlupp standard.
What do you say about the argument or the point that we only know the reasoning of four judges, not a majority, that the fifth joined the judgment, but we don't know the reason for joining the judgment?
Your Honor, first, if I could...
Only you need five for majority opinion.
And if I could correct a misstatement of opposing counsel, this is not a 4-4 decision. It's a 4-3 if you don't count Justice Womack, okay? One justice actually abstained and did not participate in the decision. So it was three justices writing dissenting opinions and four justices writing, either joining in the lead opinion or writing concurring opinions, 4-3. Justice Womack concurred in the result. The result was he was granted relief on the basis of a Schlupp-type claim. And I've already stated, and this court should concentrate on the fact that a Schlupp-type claim requires a showing of actual innocence.
Four is only half of eight. It's not a majority.
But you still have a concurrence in the ultimate outcome. And the ultimate outcome could not occur under Texas law, under the federal jurisprudence on habeas corpus, which has been adopted in the state of Texas by the Court of Criminal Appeals. You have to have a showing of innocence under a Schlupp standard before you can grant relief. It is a fallacy to believe that a justice could have concurred in the ultimate finding without having concurred in the result, without coinciding with Texas law, federal jurisprudence, Texas jurisprudence that states in a Schlupp-type claim, it is more likely than not a constitutional violation led to the conviction of an innocent person.
Are there any other type of procedural cases where a conviction is overturned because of some procedural issue, and then it's sent back to the trial court? I mean, that happens all the time, it seems.
Yes, Your Honor, all the time. And I believe opposing counsel would have this court believe that Schlupp-type claims happen all the time. But the Schlupp opinion states very specifically, this is an extremely rare instance.
What happens in that situation? I'll finish this question.
Yes.
What happens in that situation where it does get sent back, and for whatever reason, the state decides not to go forward? I mean, that doesn't prove actual innocence. That seems to tie into the state's argument here. that you can't have compensation for those type of procedural defects.
No, Your Honor, and that is the Anthony Graves case. That's why the legislature amended the law, because Anthony Graves had writ of habeas corpus granted on the basis of merely a Brady claim. I believe it was a Brady claim, I'm sorry. And there was no finding of Schlupp and no finding of Herrera. But then he goes back to get his compensation. In that case, yes, he did not have a finding of actual innocence. So what the legislature did is said, okay, there's a hole in the legislation, so let's fill that and create a way for a person in Anthony Graves' case to get compensated. If we take what the comptroller is trying to put forward in this case, then basically what the legislature did is, over since 1965, when, let me remind you, a Herrera claim did not exist and a DNA claim did not exist. But since 1965, over the course of 45 years, the legislature has continually amended the statute to make sure that its remedial purposes are met, and yet now there's this glaring hole where somebody who meets a Herrera claim DNA gets compensated, somebody who can't even meet Schlupp claim gets compensated, but this person who meets one of the two types of actual innocence claims the Court of Criminal Appeals has said exists is now, I'm supposed to go tell my client, he's poor, he's in poor health, but he's free.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.